we can survive, and it can be mitigated by prayer and patience and holiness, but we can't avoid it any longer.
So according to Malachy, the Pope understands and has understood for 20 years that we are in the times of chastisement, which will only successively get worse. The Pope is not a naive religious babbler, as many secularists might portray him. He grew up, first of all, under the Nazis, studied in seminary during the time of World War II, grew up then and was reared under the patronage of Stefan Cardinal Wyszynski, called the Fox of Europe, who successfully managed to outmaneuver communism, ultimately resulting in its downfall in Poland. Remember that all of the final thrusts at communism began in churches of various types throughout the different countries in the Eastern Bloc. Now, the Pope has no illusions whatsoever about the transnationalists, nor about Russia's ultimate aims as well. Russia was the core country, if you recall, in the Fatima predictions of 1917. Russia was to be consecrated to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, and if that wasn't achieved, then we would ultimately enter the if-then period of the chastisements. But when he looks at the transnationalists, he knows what he's looking at. Does the Church, Malachy was asked, have any part in the New World Order?
No, not ultimately. For the moment, yes. Those who are managing the New World Order see the Church in its structure, in its visible organization, as a source of social stability. It's schools, it's universities, it's people obeying what they're told to do. If you can get a hold of that organization, you literally control the lives of nearly a billion people. Remember, we are almost 1 billion people today, nominal Catholics. If you get that in train, under control, think of the power you have.
If you recall, what we've been saying for quite some time here on the program is that the new international sort of socialist secular order, which is now developing a big dollop of pantheism, will ultimately have no place for Islam or for Orthodox Judaism or for any kind of Orthodox Christianity, using that in the traditionalist term rather than a denominational term. It will have no place for them ultimately. Malachy was asked at one point in an interview what exactly this would demand of families. Was there any way that they could do all sorts of things to defend themselves from this very aggressive encroachment and onslaught, which also, by the way, Pope Paul VI understood was coming within just a couple of decades of his own death? Here's what Malachy said.
No, it won't save them. It may help some of them survive physically, but morally about their children. What's going to happen to children in schools where they're taught pagan doctrine, where their outcome-based education makes them little robots because they're affective. The affective side of their character is under control. They've been taught to say yes and no according to the will of the state. And that's what's happening. And it'll be more than heroic later, short time later. It may mean martyrdom. It may mean they will get rid of you by various means. You can get rid of people by evicting them, making it possible for them to earn bread, catching them on violations of rules made about their children's schooling, about finance, about their business. They will be martyrs. The family will be martyrs. And anybody who wants to rear their children today must homeschool them to some degree. There's no good school any longer. Not really satisfactory. You've got to homeschool them, and besides laying the bridge of these institutions. Yeah, we are expelled. And today, in any normal dinner table in Manhattan or in Los Angeles or Atlanta or Chicago or Paris or London, if you dared say anything against homosexuality, if you dared say anything about abortion or fetal research, against these things, of critiquing them, you won't be invited back. It's bad form. If somebody says, well, he's going to see his mistress, you're supposed to take that as marvelous. It's somebody says that, well, he's come out of the closet and he's a homosexual and he does this, that, that. You're supposed to accept that as saying that, well, he's changed his club. He has, joined a new organization. Today, if we protest, if we say, no, I'm a Christian, I can't have anything to do with that, you're avoided. You're ostracized. You're regarded as funny, as a fanatic, as politically incorrect and socially unacceptable. And we'll finally eliminate you, marginalize you. And Paul VI, to give him his due, did say that probably, not in his lifetime, but probably, Catholics would become a minority on the fringe of civilization, marginalized. And we're already marginalized, by the way. In the city, in New York, for instance, there isn't one Catholic voice speaking in municipal councils. Not one. Everything is decided on the principle of the big dollar or the big pleasure. And nothing, those who fool themselves, like the present authorities of the church, if they are friendly with and nice with these people, they'll get what they want, are finding out rapidly they get nothing. They're bastardized further and further and further and humiliated and eliminated finally. They have no power. So yes, it's heroic. It may lead to martyrdom. It may lead to martyrdom. Just to be Christian, just to be Catholic, just to rear your children. And there are laws now in the making where make it practically impossible for you to homeschool. And we know that the wife of the President of the United States, Hillary Rodham Clinton, has said she's going to wipe out all homeschooling.
Obviously, then, there's been a radical paradigm change going on through which we have passed. And by the way, I should note that some of these clips, it's obvious that Malachy is talking to Catholics and not to Christians in general. Now, we've gone through a major paradigm change. Why is the old guard crumbling? What was its cause?
Because the civilization which gave rise to them, by the way, the Roman Catholic Church created that civilization, is at an end. It's the evening of the civilization. All the reasons for the existence of a monarchy with some decorum and some leadership power, some leadership role, they're gone. They no longer believe. They don't live Christian lives. They're no longer Christian in their behavior. They may have been baptized. They may not have. But the civilization as a whole, in its academia, in its public life, in its politics, in its war, in its peace, in its economy, is totally paganized. The civilization has ceased to be Christian. And the Catholic Church, which created a civilization, the Roman Catholic organization which did, is disappearing with it, and with the monarchy. And hence we have an outbreak of what students are now calling tribalism. You have the Walloons and the Flemings in Belgium who want to separate. You have the Bretons and the French.
Welcome to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. I'm Michael Shaw, and I'm going to be your host tonight, and this is a show I'm much looking forward to. We'll have two different segments these 2 hours. The first segment will be with Dr. Stephen Baskerville, who's a professor of political science at Howard University, who will talk to us about the question of, is there really a fatherhood crisis? Of course, this issue cuts right to the core of the question of family autonomy, and what the status of the family unit is in America today. And then in the second hour, we're going to talk about regulation and junk science, a formulation for disaster in the Santa Cruz Mountains Redwood Forests. And we'll find, I think, by the end of these 2 hours that that there's quite a sharing of philosophy that are behind these two problems looming in the American landscape. Well, Santa Cruz residents certainly face the sustainable development onslaught on many fronts, but so does America. Here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, we're here to help report on this alarming pattern and show how the programs like the ones in Santa Cruz threaten to change the structure and purpose of American government and adversely affect nearly every aspect of our daily lives. If you're in Santa Cruz, you need to know, and if you're outside Santa Cruz, you need to learn how to identify the patterns of localized attacks on private property and family autonomy. These are questions that are now faced by all American communities. Each of us needs to come to understand that we need to protect and defend liberty everywhere by promoting equal justice and the constitutional administration of government. You know, the question that is really core and center to the issues of today are really quite basic. It involves the question of what is the nature of government. And when you think through all the political science books, you can come but to really two premises for the establishment of government. One such premise is that government exists for the purpose of protecting an individual's unalienable rights. And the other premise is that government exists to control human action. Well, here in Santa Cruz and across the country, we're starting to see that there's a coup in place on the American Constitution because new systems of government, economics, and justice are being established. In the context of a new system of government, a primary tool in the implementation of sustainable development is the use of what's called facilitated, that means prearranged, indoctrination. Stakeholder, that means that nobody owns anything and everybody owns everything. Consensus, that means nobody believes in everything, but everybody agrees in what they're supposed to agree into. Councils. Now, these councils claim public involvement while adapting prearranged regulatory regimes that are directed by senior or apex councils. These are agencies or unelected regional governmental authorities. The purposes of these councils is to subvert the constitutional administration of government by ignoring political boundaries, undermining representative democracy, and erasing the separation of powers between branches and levels of government by avoiding the principles of equal justice. A new system of economics is also being arranged for the American society. You see, sustainable development's economic system calls for government-corporate partnerships to replace free enterprise. Government-private partnerships, of course, are not a new idea. The European Axis powers of the 20th century operated pursuant to this idea. You see, free enterprise derives from private action that secures individual liberty. Government-private partnerships operate under the centralized regulatory authority and implement a system of favored privilege. Large-scale and corruption follow once the checks and balances that are inherent to a system of private property vanish. Well, a new system of justice is also happening. We're going to hear about a lot of that tonight in our segment on the crisis of fatherhood, the very important and critical issue to the matter of family autonomy. Because you see, justice is no longer being applied equally. And we'll be right back here at Radio Liberty.
Policies, procedures, and laws enacted by local government and non-government organizations in the name of diversity, community, and Earth are diminishing individual liberty, degrading ecology, and threatening human life and happiness in towns across the nation. You've likely already experienced some of the consequences of policies that are approaching full implementation with little public discourse or voter input. Have you experienced any of the following? Restricted freedom of mobility as you sit for hours in gridlock traffic. Mounting limitations on, or even loss of, your private property. An engineered housing crisis that you're being told must be solved with your money by those who caused it. Loss of parental authority to a government education system that seems to emphasize social indoctrination over education. Transitioning of water resources to regional control by non-elected bureaucrats with subsequent engineered shortages. Heavy influence of international and non-government organizations over local policy at the expense of representative democracy. You're not alone in recognizing these and other symptoms of our diminishing freedoms. The adverse consequences of collectivist policies and laws enacted by local government bodies are affecting almost every citizen in your town. Many have noticed and are ready to act to advance individual liberty, family autonomy, a vibrant ecology, and a strong economy. They're doing this by turning their individual initiative into local action for national impact. To find out how you can join others to advance freedom, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. That's freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. The views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Well, welcome back. Here we are. I'm going to get that music timing right sooner or later. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show at Radio Liberty. We're here about to introduce our special guest, Dr. Stephen Baskerville. Now, Dr. Baskerville gets to the root of what I'll call a tyranny that the family court system has become. Here we can understand how government intervention into family autonomy is bringing tremendous harm to children, fathers, families, mothers, and society. You know, men and women, moms and dads, know the truth. The crisis that we find as a result of our family court litigation is a problem with government policy. You know, I don't want to jump in too quickly here, but I think we can all readily recognize there's no crisis in the spirit of fatherhood, because that's a spirit that reigns eternally within the nature of human beings. Now, Dr. Stephen Baskerville holds a PhD from the London School of Economics and teaches political science at Howard University in Washington, D.C. Recently, he became president of the American Coalition for Fathers and Children. His writings on these issues have appeared in leading national and international publications, including the Washington Post and Washington Times, the Independent Review, which is where I found his most recent article, quite an amazing one. You can find that at the Independent Institute in Oakland, California, Women's Quarterly, Catholic World Report, Crisis Magazine, Insight Magazine, Family Policy, American Spectator, Liberty Magazine, LouRockwell.com, and more. He's an advisor to the, he's the president now of the American Coalition for Fathers and Children, and he's a spokesman for Men, Fathers, and Children International, a coalition of 12 fatherhood organizations, and he's been quite active and profound in this subject. Stephen, are you there?
I'm here.
Well, it's nice to have you. You're calling from back east, so it's a little later there than here. We still have a little bit of light in the sky, and a beautiful sky it is tonight here at Monterey Bay on the central coast of California. Good evening.
Good evening. It's good to be here.
Well, what we want to talk about is the subject that you are quite a leading authority on, and you've entitled your most recent research document, Is There a Fatherhood Crisis? I may have jumped the gun a little bit, but let's hear your considered word on that subject.
Well, it's a rhetorical question. Of course, there is a fatherhood crisis, and it's widely recognized for about 10 years now. Groups and governments have been calling attention to this problem, and they're quite right to do so. The breakdown of the family is often first most acutely felt by children as the loss of their fathers. The fatherhood advocates, the current Assistant Secretary of State Wade Horn and David Blankenhorn and other scholars and experts in this field have been warning now that fatherlessness, father absence, is connected with virtually every major social problem in this country. Violent crime, drug abuse, psychological problems like suicide, truancy, you name it. Ask any police officer, and they will tell you the single biggest predictor of a teenager's criminality is the loss of a father. This is now well known, and it's very good that these advocates have put this forth. What they have not been so forthright about is telling us why this problem happens. The assumption is this is just sprung out of nowhere, that it's some kind of cultural problem or social problem. In fact, it's a problem of government policy. It is created by the government. The more honest fatherhood advocates will tell, are silent about it. You have others, politicians mostly, who will tell you that this crisis has come about by fathers abandoning their children in large numbers. There's no evidence at all from social science or anywhere else that this is true, that fathers are abandoning their children in large numbers. There is very concrete evidence that government officials are forcibly removing fathers from their children. Courts, bureaucratic agencies, police, officers, sheriff's deputies, sometimes at gunpoint, sometimes with handcuffs, are forcing fathers to stay away from their children. And the government is not telling us this, but this is in fact what's happening. And the government is not denying it either. When I pointed it out, and other scholars and journalists pointed out, they in fact don't deny that this is happening.
So why is there such a information blackout across the streets of America?
Well, there's a number of reasons. You might want to look at the great English essayist G.K. Chesterton pointed out many years ago in an article on divorce that there's an inherent confrontational relationship between the family and the state. Chesterton pointed out that the family is the most important check on government power, that it creates a private sphere of life that is off limits to the government. And therefore, the family and the government are sooner or later, Chesterton said, would sooner or later be in confrontation with one another. And that the government sees, consciously or otherwise, that the family is the main limitation, the main rival to its power. And the family member that is the most, the main rival to government power is the father. When the father is removed from the family, the government fills the void. The government becomes the father. The government becomes the husband. The government becomes the protector in some ways. The growth in the last 200 years of police forces, you might argue, had something to do with that. The government, even more recently, the government has become the provider of the family through welfare, through child support enforcement, through a myriad of services to single mothers, also with the private sector services to single mothers. So the father has been made redundant by the government and by, in some cases, private services. So the government has become the father. We speak about the nanny state, but in some ways it's more accurate to speak about the paternal state. And when I say the government, I'm talking about a lot of interests here that have filled the void, that have come to become surrogate fathers. I mean judges, courts, lawyers, forensic psychotherapists, social workers, various kinds of bureaucratic police like child support enforcement agents and child protective services. They're called social workers and they don't wear uniforms, but effectively they are police. And these interests have grown up as a result of welfare and as a result of divorce primarily. And they have enormous power. And the main source of their power is our children.
You mentioned divorce as a factor. How is it that government then has utilized a divorce system to, or has the government utilized a divorce system to increase its power?
Well, divorce is, many of us have not thought about divorce. what's happened in the last 30 years or so with divorce has been a deception. The government brought in, as largely as a result of the sexual revolution of the 60s. Divorce laws were changed beginning about 1969 to allow what in many cases was advertised as being divorce by mutual consent. In other words, the two people who decided not to live together any longer could get a divorce by mutual consent. This was the way it was advertised. In fact, it was a deception. What it provided for was divorce on demand, unilateral divorce on demand, so that one party could call in the state and get a divorce over the objections of the other spouse, even when children were involved in property and so forth. So effectively,
no fault is that.
So no fault is the term they used. They borrowed it from auto insurance, of all places. But it really wasn't that. It was unilateral divorce. For one spouse, it's often forced divorce. And what it allows is one spouse to call in the state as an ally to remove the other spouse from the home. Many people have this idea that, that even unilateral divorce is just, government preventing people from getting divorced, or that one spouse, can't let go and wants to keep living with someone that doesn't want to live with them anymore. It's much more complicated than that. When you think about it, unilateral divorce is the government destroying private life, the government destroying a private home. Divorce, far more than marriage, has to be enforced by the government, or it doesn't work. So it involves inherently throwing people out of their homes, taking away their property, and most serious of all, I think, taking away their children. So it creates a huge vacuum. It effectively is an attack on private life, not just marriage, but an attack on the entire concept of private life. No home is too private now for the government to intervene by waving the flag of divorce or child abuse or child protection or something like that.
Well, that suggests that the conditions of divorce management and government involvement gives government an opportunity to eliminate otherwise protected rights?
Absolutely. It is quite stunning how the entire divorce industry has essentially suspended the concept of due process of law. There's a huge body of federal case law, and case law going back before the foundation of the United States, common law, goes back centuries in England, saying essentially that people's homes are their private lives, that their children are their private affairs, that they have the right to raise their children as they see fit, that the government can't interfere with your home, your property, and your children. And the divorce regime, the divorce industry, has just completely set aside this body of law, these principles that are centuries old. The government can seize your children and use them as a pretext to seize your property, to throw you out of your home, and to virtually run roughshod over the entire Bill of Rights.
Well, Stephen, that is one of the most striking reads I've ever had in looking at what you've written on how essentially each and every element of the Bill of Rights is being violated by family courts, courts which Abe Fortas called kangaroo courts. Now, Abe Fortas was a Supreme Court justice of the United States who wrote that in 1967. When we get back from our break here, we're going to continue with Dr. Baskerville, Bill, on the issue of fatherhood crisis and its cause. Here at Radio Liberty, the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show.
Interrogation. sociopaths going out with a bang. They won't need a Bill of Rights or a Constitution, cause they're being set up just to be knocked down. Classrooms full of convicts and clowns. Here's what your money brought you. So much for the revolution. Things aren't what they seem. It's the American nightmare, the end of the dream. Kids are being prepared for a world of masters and slaves. Cause it's not about education, it's called behavior modification. Collectivist thought at work in the home of the brave. It's a school day in the USA. It's about this new age.
As a listener of tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show, you have exclusive access to our online audience participation center at freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Here are just some of the value-added features you'll get by logging on while you're tuned in. Get free access to the research and articles that have contributed to tonight's show. See an important multimedia presentation titled The Philosophy of Liberty. Email the host with your comments. Get special discounts on featured books like the ever-popular Pocket Constitution. Register to receive a free subscription to AdvancedBulletin.net, which provides commentary and analysis on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. So get more. Log on while you're tuned in and advance freedom at freedom21santacruz.net/radio.
Welcome back. We're here with Stephen Baskerville, and we're discussing the family autonomy issue and the question of a fatherhood crisis. And we're going to talk about the Bill of Rights, the bedrock to the glory of freedom in America. And what we're all beginning to see more clearly is that the Bill of Rights is about protecting private property and private family. It's a private life. It's our private liberty. And that's what's at risk every time we find government intervention into our private property issues and into our family issues. And Stephen, welcome back. Thank you for holding there through our breaks at some stations and our own advertisements with others. And let's proceed with that discussion regarding rights and how the family courts are treating unalienable rights.
Well, as I was saying, they are virtually, you could go down the entire Bill of Rights and you would not find a item that is not routinely violated by the family courts. And it sounds extraordinary, but it is. Perhaps the most extraordinary of all is the Fourth Amendment, which some people consider to be one of the most important, against unreasonable searches and seizures, and yet family courts seize people's property without giving any reason. They seize people's children without giving any reason other than saying, well, you're divorced, even if you didn't agree to the divorce, even if you didn't do anything give any grounds for the divorce. So they just, it's necessity, the tyrant's plea. They say this is necessary to provide for your children, the children that they've confiscated, by using the term divorce. So family courts, they'll even tell you that they are, and sometimes they will tell you that they are courts of equity rather than courts of law. This is a distinction that supposedly doesn't exist anymore, but it's often used as an excuse to say that the Bill of Rights doesn't apply. It's amazing, really. We have cases of courts gagging fathers, gagging reporters, preventing them from reporting what goes on in the courts. This is especially strong in other countries like Britain and Australia, New Zealand, Canada. This has taken place. We have instances of fathers who have spoken out against the family courts being forced to pay the fees of lawyers they haven't hired as punishment and jailed when they cannot pay those fees. It's extraordinary. Some people are calling it actually a reign of terror in this court. They just operate as if the Bill of Rights doesn't exist.
My. Now, Stephen, we have a caller, Roger Penn. Roger, are you there?
Yes. Thanks, John.
You have a question for or a comment?
Yes, thanks, gentlemen. Would you care to float a question about how this whole child abuse industry, I believe, undermines fatherhood and the very life and limb of the children? I'm thinking along the lines of it, like in Florida alone, there's some 4,000 foster care children, whereabouts unknown. And then even if we assume, I think safely, that the vast majority of foster parents are wholesome folks, there's just such huge numbers that it still works out to, I think it's, what, four or five higher times rates of sexual and other predations than if the same children were kept in perhaps less than wholesome households?
That's a very good question. This is just one of the many issues that we do hear about in the news quite frequently without being told how it's connected with the divorce courts, the family courts, and the fatherhood crisis. That's right. There is a huge industry. This is one of the industries surrounding divorce, the child abuse industry, which will tell you that there's this huge, huge crisis of child abuse. Well, there is actually a huge crisis of child abuse, but that also is actually government-created. It's created by courts who separate children from their fathers, for the most part. The social science research is very, very clear on this. The vast majority of child abuse takes place in the homes of single mothers. Now, the child abuse industry doesn't tell you this. They run ads on television with men shown as child abusers. In fact, fathers commit very, very little child abuse. The vast majority, HHS, the Department of Health and Human Services, has shown that consistently that about two-thirds of child abusers are mothers, and that the other one-third of child abusers are fathers commit a very tiny amount of it. Many of them are female caretakers or males in the household. What they've recently concentrated on is sexual abuse, because that is committed by men. But sexual abuse is a tiny amount of child abuse, and sexual abuse committed by fathers is a tiny amount of sexual abuse. So it's really extraordinary that they've created this industry. It's almost like the child abusers are throwing fathers out of their home so they can abuse their children with impunity. The safest place for a child is in an intact home with a father present.
That should come as no surprise to anyone across this great land. And the issue seems to be that it's time for dads to face who they are and do what's right. Keep control of the family. Keep control of freedom. Keep control of your life.
Some of our affiliate stations take a commercial break. Let me take a few moments to tell the rest of you a bit about Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a freedom policy center that celebrates the principles of self-governance and individual liberty, which inspired the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States of America. It's a group of individuals who advance the freedom of all by promoting and strengthening the practice of constitutional administration in local, state, and national government. The Freedom 21 Santa Cruz mission is to advance the principles of freedom to individuals, community, and government through public discourse, community outreach, and grassroots education programs. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. constitutional republic. Objectives of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz and its participants include the following. Focus public attention on the value of the freedoms guaranteed to Americans by the Constitution of the United States of America, and encourage individual and community interest in protecting those freedoms. Provide opportunities for political discourse among organization membership and the community. Promote and strengthen government responsiveness to the principles of freedom. Educate the public about local, national, and international threats to individual freedom and the U.S. Constitutional Republic. Invite Americans to unite against the advance of international collectivist movements that cause poverty, oppression, and a degraded earth. And to create a model for successfully promoting and ensuring U.S. constitutional government in a local community. To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Help keep alive the principles of individual liberty and advance the cause of freedom in the 21st century. E-I-E-I-O.
Welcome back. We're here with Stephen Baskerville discussing father rights issues. A woman named Diana Thompson writes about father's rights aren't just for fathers. And she says that when a father sees his child less than half the time, there are many women who lose. The grandmothers, the aunts, the sisters all lose the chance to build a relationship with and contribute to the lives of the child. The ex-wife loses a parenting partner, and the child, who is as likely as not female, loses a male role model. And the evidence shows that she needs that male role model. Well, Stephen, that was an excellent question from Roger Penn, and your answer is one that I surmise continues.
Yes. Well, it's really the whole question of child abuse is really quite shocking in this. I mean, if you look at the statistics, that first of all, most child abuse takes place not where the father is absent, or is present, but where the father is absent. When you connect that with the fact that most fathers are absent because they are forced to be absent by the family court through court orders, you reach the inevitable conclusion that in fact, the courts are effectively the causers of child abuse. They are the creators of the environment most likely to be conducive to abused children. And when you consider, in addition to that, that the courts preside over an entourage of social workers and lawyers and police and other personnel who make their living through abused children, the conclusion is almost escapable that the courts are creating child abuse. And this is a shocking and horrible thing to say, but it's a well-known principle in political science, which is my field, that bureaucracies and among lay people who realize that bureaucracies create the problems that they're supposed to be solving. They develop a vested interest in the problem that they ostensibly exist to solve. And in this case, the problem they're supposed to be solving is child abuse. Well, if they solved the problem of child abuse, they wouldn't have any work for themselves. Much more in their interest to create the problem of child abuse. And that's precisely what they are doing through the removal of fathers.
Wow.
It's an awful thing to say, but I've said this in print, and I've never been confronted or challenged on it.
Well, listeners to our radio show are more familiar with this same mode of operation by governmental agencies and bureaucratic organization in the realm of property, especially here in California and on the coastline of California. But it sounds to me, what I think I'm learning, is that the model for the theft of private property has been the theft of children by a family court system that has been engineered and created by a government that, as you said at the beginning, sees the family as its natural competitor. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It is. I think it's irrefutable that we are standing today at the fulfillment of Chesterton's prophecy. The family and the state are in direct confrontation with each other today as they have never been before. It's happening in many, many places. It's happening in questions of school choice and homeschooling. It's happening in these areas of child abuse, of domestic violence. It's happening in issues, you could argue, I think, of gun control. It's happening in many, many areas that most people don't realize, but the place where it's happening most directly is in this world of family courts, which is not understood by most people because it's so secretive. But this is the most direct confrontation between the state and the family. And it's happening in many, many other areas as well.
Well, it strikes me from reading your article that there are built-in motives for court system, etc., to engage in this kind of assault on fatherhood. I know in the late 80s, the next county over, Santa Clara County, the home of Silicon Valley, the judges there were judged by virtue of their average child support award, with those getting the highest average being rewarded in some way most favorably, and that became their goal and incentive because that was the directive from on top. Is that a typical kind of situation? Can you cite some others of that nature?
Absolutely. Most of this, we think of family law and family matters, divorce matters, as being a state issue under our Constitution. But in fact, this is another area where the federal government has massively aggrandized power. Much of this is federally driven, and especially through the financing. And the main financial engine of the divorce industry, the thing that is driving divorce and family breakup financially, is the child support system, which is driven by the federal government. There's a number of federal financial incentives that impel local and state agencies to collect as much child support as possible. In other words, to set child support burdens as high as possible, to make them onerous, to squeeze every penny out of every father that they can, and of course, to encourage as much divorce as possible and family breakdown, because without that, then there's no child support order in the first place. So we have a federal, what amounts to a federal subsidy on divorce, a forced subsidy, that where federal agents and federal police force men, in most instances, occasionally mothers, to subsidize, to finance the theft of their own children. So it's very much driven federally, and it gives state and local governments an incentive to break up families. We hear all across the country state governments and local governments saying they would like to solve the problem of single parenthood and the family crisis and all this. In fact, no government in America has an incentive to solve the family crisis. They are filling their coffers with federal money from child support enforcement. They are filling their coffers with federal money for domestic violence and child abuse. The federal government has set it up so that state and local governments have an interest in it. And this includes conservative Republican governments that claim to be pro-family and so forth. They have to balance their budgets also, and child support money is a good way to do it.
Well, we certainly see that on the political scene, in the whole context of sustainable development, which has become the official policy of the federal government. Sustainable development seeks the elimination of private property, and sustainable development in its governing documents, the Biodiversity Assessment Report that came out of the 1992 UN Rio Conference in Rio de Janeiro, claims that both monotheism and the family unit are unsustainable. Well, when George Bush Sr. got back from Rio, having signed the Rio Accords, the Sustainable Development Documents, made sustainable development the official policy of federal agencies. And the dollars that have been flowing out to our communities and our states to implement sustainable development, which I think clearly the attack on the family through the family courts is a clear application of the kinds of policies that fit neatly within the objectives of this new paradigm, as they call it, as they transition America from the land of the free and free enterprise into an America where government takes precedence over family. Well, it certainly is stunning to hear some of the kinds of examples. I recall reading that 60,000 warrants have been issued in a single state, Massachusetts, for keeping fathers away. Have I got that?
Protective orders, yes. Under domestic violence allegations, fathers are kept away from their children even before they've done anything wrong. It's been written about quite a lot in Massachusetts. It's no accident that it's the same state. We are now having controversies over same-sex marriage. But it's not unique to Massachusetts. It's happening nationwide. These protective orders. I don't know to what extent restraining orders. I don't know exactly what the origin of them were. I know restraining orders were used in environmental law for a long time. I was shocked myself when I first learned that they were being used in divorce cases. So I'd be interested to know the parallel, what mutual development there may have been in there. Your point about private property is also relevant here. In a sense, what we have is a system of in which private property is expropriated at government at will by the government. It's almost a system of it's almost a system that operates according to the Marxist principles. From each according to its ability, to each according to its needs. Although even that is perverted, of course, because it is in fact child support is a system creating poverty. You simply cannot maintain two households at the same standard of living that you can have one household. And the greatest anti-poverty program ever devised, of course, is marriage, two-parent home. Once you break that up, you have many more expenses, and the result is inevitably the impoverishment of the children and the custodial parent and the non-custodial parent both. So it's a Marxist kind of collectivism that has exactly the opposite consequences of those that are advertised.
Well, and it strikes me that even beyond that, there's a streak of meanness, because sometimes it's from each according to what can't be achieved, and when you don't achieve it, you're thrown in jail. I mean, I've read of cases where people are ordered to pay more child support than their income, and when they're unable to do that, they're incarcerated.
That's absolutely right. Again, there's no due process of law when it comes to setting child support awards. We hear that so-and-so didn't pay his child support, what an evil beast he is, let's throw him in jail. But we never consider who sets these child support amounts. In fact, they're set by lawyers and judges, often in violation of the separation of powers, often in violation of, with conflicts of interest. Child support awards are not always set in all states by legislatures. They are often set by the courts. In many states, they are set by the enforcement agencies. So it's the equivalent of the police making the laws. Well, there's a very good reason we don't normally allow the police to make the laws under the separation of powers, because they have an incentive to create criminals. And this is precisely what the child support enforcement agencies are doing. In every state I've ever had contact with, the child support enforcement agency directs and coordinates and controls the process of setting the child support burden. I myself was briefly on a child support review panel in Virginia, and I could see who was controlling the panel. The head of the enforcement agency was controlling it. My predecessor on the panel told me as much, that was his experience. I wrote an article about that, exposing that in the Washington Times, and I was immediately removed from the panel by the state secretary of state, and I was told that I was removed because of my opinions expressed in an article in the Washington Times.
My, that seems to be a disease spreading across this country. I've been removed from some of these regional agency councils because I have spoken out, and very reasonably and rationally, actually just stating out the truth. And that seems to be a major nemesis for those who are in control these days of our public policy making.
It seems to me, yes.
Well, what sort of things, let me first suggest to the listeners, if you want to read this striking and stunning and well-researched, well-written, I'll call it an expose, though I know that's not what's intended by Stephen. The article can be found at freedom21santacruz.net/radio. And there you'll find information relevant to tonight's show, including Stephen Baskerville's writing called Is There a Fatherhood Crisis?, which has been printed in this quarter's Independent Review, a scholarly journal of political economics put out by the Independent Institute. Now, if America is to get out of this deep hole, and we've got to first stop digging, how is it that we stop digging this hole, and what is it we ought to do in order to salvage some prospects for our progeny?
There's a number of things. The main, I think the main problem is secret courts and secret government that is cut off from people's scrutiny. These courts have got to be reviewed. They have to be, their proceedings must be made public. They should probably be investigated. They should certainly be investigated. They should probably be abolished. We have courts to deal with criminality and civil torts. We don't need special courts whose sole purpose is to investigate people's private lives. They blur the distinction between criminality on the one hand or legal wrongdoing and private imperfection, human imperfection. If people are accused of crimes like domestic violence, they should be tried properly in a proper court of law with due process of law openly. And if they're convicted, they should be jailed, and if they're exonerated, they should be left alone. These courts punish human imperfection rather than crimes or torts. They also need to be required to adhere to constitutional rights. There's a huge, as I said, body of federal case law that recognizes parenting as a constitutional right, and these courts need to be made to recognize that. There was a bill introduced in Congress a few years ago, which we would like to see reintroduced in different form, which protects the rights of parents, called the Parental Rights and Responsibilities Act, which would protect the rights of parents to raise their children as they see fit and not have the federal government interfering.
Isn't it a bizarre circumstance, though, that we would need a statute to protect a right that is just basic and inherent, imbued within all of us?
Well, that's right. It is. Ironic. And as I say, there's a huge body of federal case law which is simply ignored. So if the courts would adhere to their own principles and precedents, then we wouldn't have a problem. But the interests here are just massive. On the state and federal level, I think there's also been increasingly set up. People are becoming increasingly set up with what's going on here. There's been a great push to repeal no-fault divorce. I think that would be a step in the right direction. I don't think it would solve the problem, but I think the dialogue that would be created through such moves would be conducive to solving the problem.
Wouldn't it make sense if people, I mean, nobody I think proposes that someone must be forced to live with someone that they don't want to live with anymore or can't live with for some reason.
Right.
But wouldn't it make sense if the person who wanted to leave the relationship is the person who left?
I think that's a very common sense kind of argument, which I think makes perfect sense. I think that's true. In other words, the person who is at fault, who breaks up the marriage either through leaving or through some ground that has been recognized, is the person who suffers the consequences rather than the one who keeps the family intact. There is a lot of sense in that. Other people, the organization I head favors the shared parenting after divorce to make the presumption that both parents remain involved in the raising of the children so the children don't become pawns and weapons in the hands of one parent or both parents.
I was assuming that would be the case. There's always a requirement for a healthy child that both parents be able to participate. But a child's going to be in one place or another predominant, or in terms of their school system or whatever. So sometimes there may be some close calls there.
Right. But what we need to reintroduce is the concept that courts are there to dispense justice. And instead we've turned the courts into administrative, into social science, social policy, administrative units, mm-hmm. rather than dispensers of
we'll
justice.
We'll be right back. Thank you very much. Sometimes I've been asked, what is abundance ecology? Well, it begins with the idea that an owner's right to determine the use of his property is the very essence of private property. This is well illustrated by George Washington's eloquent statement, private property and freedom are inseparable. Abundance ecology rejects the wrongfully premised hysteria over endangered species invasive species, and other political tools that promote state collectivism. Instead, abundance ecology is guided by the simple exercise of reason for the importance of human life, individual liberty and private property, and an awareness of the great potential associated with innovation that arises in a society where individual liberty is the central organizing principle. As California, the nation, and the world are being redirected by a new central organizing principle that calls for the preservation of nature, both man and nature have begun to experience the appearances of shortages. For example, the National and State Endangered Species Act, modeled on United Nations treaties, have brought degradation to the wildlands within the United States, while the citizens and society at large are stripped of wealth and immense potential benefits. The effect of the Endangered Species Act and its soon-to-be-birthed offspring, the Invasive Species Act, is to eliminate from America an owner's right to determine the use of his property. While regulatory efforts have failed to serve society or nature, the restoration of freedom will fuel our happiness and resume the American tradition of advancing improvement one step at a time. A wealthy nation takes interest in its ecology. Free people take the action necessary to advance their own interests by creating benefits that extend to others. This includes an improving ecosystem management. The practice of abundance ecology works to release the potential productivity and diversity of a landscape. To achieve this end, an owner must be free to engage in rigorous disturbance and free to pursue a reasoned and creative process of trial and error. This process is suited to the choice of each individual and the uniqueness of each property. The foundation of abundance ecology theory is the knowledge that a direct relationship between man and land is paramount. An improving planet is possible only in a society that respects the ideals of private property, individual liberty, and human life. We're back here with Dr. Stephen Baskerville, political science professor at Howard University, and we've been discussing the family courts, the so-called fatherhood crisis, and the real crisis that America is facing, the crisis over restoring and resurrecting our families while we shrink the size of our government. We can't have one without doing the other. So it's step by step, person by person, to come to understand how it is that this expanding government is not in the interests of me, you, or anybody else. With that understanding, I think we can start to make some improvement. Stephen, we have a caller, Michael, from Santa Cruz on the line. Let's hear what he has to ask us. Michael?
Yes.
You have a question or a comment?
Well, yes, it's a very interesting program, and I wonder if your guest has read or knows much about Alfred Kinsey. The book I just finished was called Kinsey, Crimes and Consequences by Judith Reisman, who has also been on Dr. Stan's program. And it's about the behind the scenes of Alfred Kinsey and his crew of pedophiles who held children down and raped them and made statistics of them and came out with his book started the American Sexual Revolution. Is your author familiar with Alfred Kinsey and some of his crimes?
Yes, I have read some of this. About some of this. I'm not familiar with it. I've read reviews of the book that you're referring to.
It's an excellent book. And what she does extensive work. She studied for 30 years on this man. You could call him a man. And she brings up the point that essentially American men were made into monsters by this man's statistics while he was going into prisons and searching out the most heinous of the sex offenders and taking their sexual histories, etc., and presented them as the typical American man, father, brother, uncle, whatever, of the American society. And that began the downfall of man as the head of the family, and divorce rates rose accordingly. It's a very interesting book, and it's integral to understanding this problem that we're in right now.
Well, Michael, I appreciate your call, and I think you've made a good point. It strikes me certainly that there has been a multifaceted attack, an institutional attack on man or fatherhood. I mean, we can also look at the disproportionate amount of drugging of our 7 and 8 year old boys in government schools with things like Ritalin. And while that's not directly associated with the fatherhood crisis that Dr. Baskerville is speaking of, it does relate to the undermining of the family and the undermining of malehood, I'm surmising.
Actually, if I may just comment on that, I think actually what you allude to is connected with the fatherhood crisis. Again, I discovered myself many times that things which we don't normally think of as being connected often are. But as you say, most of the children that are drugged with Ritalin in the schools are boys. And many times, the most disruptive children in the schools, the most disruptive boys especially, are fatherless boys. And many of the children that are drugged are the children of single mothers, and with the permission of the single mothers, excuse me, but not the permission of the father. So I think that this is one more thing that is directly related to keeping fallout from the absence of fathers. So you're absolutely right, and your caller is right, that these things are all very much connected, and I have no doubt that Alfred Kinsey's work was a major force in the creation of the sexual revolution and the institutionalization of people to deal with these problems.
We're about ready to run out of time. This could just go on. You are, you have been quite an enlightening factor here, and I would look forward to doing this again, and I want to thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you for your attention.
We're going to talk about regulation and junk science.
Views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Welcome to tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show on this wonderful wintry Wednesday night. Tonight we're going to have a special guest from from Yakima, Washington, Mr. Jude Doty. In the second hour, from Kern County in California, we're going to have Mr. Chris Horgan. The core issue that has faced society since the beginning of time is a simple question. That issue is, who decides the terms of your life? Is it you, the individual, or is it the state? If we're going to resolve that the answer to that is that the individual decides the terms of one's own life, then each of us in society must come to understand that it is necessary to respect the role of the family. This idea is not new to humankind. It's at least as old as the Ten Commandments. In fact, it's as old as time. But today, Americans know that something is wrong. We need to understand the nature of the problem and what caused it. But to do so, we need to understand need to start with an understanding of what could be. We need to understand the philosophy of liberty. You see, liberty presumes that government powers must be strictly limited in scope, and that the law must be applied equally to each citizen. In other words, for liberty to exist, government excess, government favoritism, and special government enforcement must all be eliminated. Good people in building a free society promote the development of individual conscience, and that can only be nurtured in a family environment. People in a free society can learn to be who they are. Yes, it's the development of one's character and the healthy expression of one's character that require a conscience. Well, tonight's guest, Mr. John Jude, excuse me, I'm going to get that right here if it breaks my tongue. Mr. Jude Doty says that he and his wife believe that children are a gift from the Lord to the parents, and that the parents, not the state, have the responsibility to train them. But if the Department of Labor and Industries for the state of Washington has disagreed and has made the Doty family pay dearly, Mr. Doty says that the labor and industries deny youth the opportunity to work with their fathers, the rich heritage that was the nation's strength only one generation ago. So we're going to discuss a shocking case from Yakima, Washington. And we have invited labor and industries to participate. Late today, the director of public affairs in Olympia, the state capital, did call me and did provide me some documentation of some administrative law hearing briefs against Mr. Doty. And we'll talk a bit about that and some other things that were said to me by the Department of Labor's public affairs director, who was not willing to be interviewed or discussed the issue on the radio. So when we get back, in fact, we have a few seconds here for me just to introduce Mr. Doty to our radio audience. Jude, are you there?
Yeah.
Well, it's good to hear your voice, and you know, your story is going to be an interesting one for our listening audience tonight, because it rings home to what's true and what needs to be faced by us all if we're to preserve having a life of our own. We'll be right back here at Freedom 21. We're back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, and I'm here with our special guest, Mr. Jude Doty. And while some of our stations are out, Jude, let's go through and tell us a little bit about who you are.
Okay. I was just a common, ordinary, I guess, construction worker, and I got into house moving 15 years ago or so. So a general contractor here in the state of Washington with a family. I have seven children and a wife, and so we focused much, though, on keeping our family unit together. We homeschooled, in fact, home business. So, but that's what got me into the trouble right now that I'm in with these fines from labor and industry for working with my boys.
And we're going to talk about that in detail when our audience fully returns, but you have seven children. You have a problem with the state of Washington because you've been working with your boys. And tell us a little bit about the agency that has been oppressing you, or agencies in general.
Our Department of Labor and Industry here now has pretty well redefined employment within the family, claiming that if a parent receives any appreciable service from their child, they have employed them, and they're absolutely just denying the role of the father and turning the father now into the employer of the child if they allow, suffer, or permit the child to do any, they call it, appreciable work. So that's what they have identified, you know, my boys as doing appreciable work for their parents. And due to that, we got some $30,000 worth of fines. Now it's been reduced to maybe $26,000 in the last hearing.
And this has happened simply because you have employed your sons in a family business.
Right, and we don't even call it that employment. We think it's the right to mentor, to train, to to disciple our own children.
Well, of course, I was using that facetiously because that was what I was told by the public affairs officer at the Department of Labor and Industries today. Is that they interpret the law to mean that when a child is engaged in activities on behalf of their parent, if their parent is engaged in a for-profit business, that they fall under child labor laws. In fact, the legal argument that he sent to me says that it's the state's position that you were subject to child labor laws because you employed your 11 and 13-year-old son, notwithstanding the circumstances. We'll be right back here at Freedom 21. Welcome back at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. I'm Michael Shaw. I'm your host tonight with our guest Jude Doty from the state of Washington. And Jude has been telling us about his circumstance with the Department of Labor and Industries up in the state of Washington. He's a father of seven children and has his own business. He had been a contractor and became a general contractor and was engaged in the business of moving houses, a productive activity, clearly with many benefits in society from that kind of productive action. And lo and behold, the Department of Labor and Industries makes an allegment against him that his 11 and 13-year-old son, who did some occasional were with his father. I mean, these are homeschooled children with their father during the workday, and suddenly they become, under his tutelage, characterized as being in your employ and that you're responsible for a lot of taxes as a result of that. So with that background, pick us up and carry us forward, Jude. This is getting interesting.
Yeah, well, that's a new definition that they're coming up with now. Just in the last 8 or 10 years, they've been getting by with it in the administrative court hearings, and it has not yet got to a county law court, superior court. But they're defining employment now, even within the family, as if you allow, suffer, or permit an appreciable service, then you have employed them, including your own minor children. So that's where we picked up some $30,000 worth of fines, and later it grew for nearly another $100,000 worth of penalties and fines that came from that. But so they're identifying me as now as the employer of my two boys because I allow them to do appreciable work. The idea of apprenticeship has been around from eternity. It's certainly the oldest fashion of learning to grow up and work with your parents, learning an occupation. People have been apprenticing their children forever. But now, in fact, they make the contrast in their own briefs that what I do could be accomplished, could be done by a nonprofit or the school. They claim the school can teach a child work skills and work, giving them work experience, actual work experience, they claim, but the parent cannot when it crosses the line and becomes appreciable.
Now, I'd just like to jump in a little bit on this, Jude. You know, what I'm hearing from you is a double standard, and that's a double standard that those of us who've come to understand sustainable development are seeing happen everywhere. And that double standard is this. Nonprofits are treated one way, and those dirty for-profit people who pay the taxes that support the nonprofits and who support their own families with the productive effort are now subject to a different and worsened set of rules under administrative law in all fields, and we've certainly seen a lot of examples of that in the property and business activity area, and I think there's a lot more cases of it in the family life as well. We've heard from Dr. Stephen Baskerfield about some of the attacks through the family courts on fatherhood. And now we're seeing attacks by, of all places, Labor and Industries on fatherhood, healthy fatherhood with healthy children as a result. And this is quite amazing if we were all to think about, gee, if we weren't conforming and sending our children to the right schools in the government's mind anyway, and doing the other things the government wants us to do, suddenly we can be the target of special investigation. And that seems to be what's happening in your case, Jude. Tell us some more about how this circumstance arose, and let us know what it is that you think the Department of Labor and Industries would allege is the worst thing you've ever done.
Well, they're claiming that we subject our children to an unreasonable risk in reference to the workplace. But now, first, you have to define employment within the family. Otherwise, the Department of Labor and Industry has no jurisdiction, and they acknowledge that. So unless they can determine my children are employees, they have nothing to look at as far as safety factors. But when you get over to the safety factors, they are absolutely contributing to the risk of the youth by driving that wedge between parent and child and keeping the children from going to work or being with their parents. Oftentimes, it's not even work. When you can have a very young year old, young 5 year old, 8, 10 year old, following dad around when he's in his workplace. We just would refer to it as mentoring or following the parents around where they go. But they're defining that now as employment. If there's any appreciable work accomplished, they even define carrying in the mail as appreciable. They made an absolute quote here in reference to bringing a UPS parcel. They call that employment. So then they want to eliminate all parents. All the, in fact, they have. I wish I could find that. I get my eyes on that. They just want to remove all the extra benefits the parent would have, and now deem them only as the employee of the parent of the child.
Wow. Now, have you had a reaction to this from others in your community?
We've been on a number of talk shows, and virtually 100% of the people who call in are in favor of the parent keeping control of the child. But there's been no one that talks to so far that I've been on that would call in and agree with the state from their position. And you know, it would incriminate every parent out there. We all have done appreciable services for our parents. Every one of us have. In fact, every labor and industry worker that I had talked to said that they were employed by outsiders, not their parents, but outsiders before the age of 12. Every one of them confessed to that. So you can't find anyone that did not do appreciable work by the age of 10 or 12.
Why don't we go back a little bit? Tell us how this mess evolved, how long you've been in it, and just what kind of dynamic that has played on you and your family and your home.
Actually, the child labor citations came 2 years ago this month when I first got the $34,000 of the fines for my boys working with me. That has been tied up in administrative hearing boards for just 2 years now. We're realizing that that is the only way that the department succeeds and wins on these cases. They simply keep them out of the court system. In fact, the State Department of Labor and Industry does 10,000 citations a year out of their office. Only 17 will ever make it into a courtroom.
So in other words,
99.83% will never get out of the hearing board.
So now,
to get through that process is at least a 3 or 4 year time frame and $50,000+ to get through it.
Well, explain to me what the administrative hearing board is. Is this connected to labor and industries in some way?
It is. They try to keep it, and it is, I believe, totally separate from the department. But at least they claim that it's completely separate. What everybody sees, though, they totally rubber stamp everything that department does. They work very close. They work very hand in glove with that department.
When we have the same circumstance with an administrative hearing office in the so-called red tag or property code enforcement here in Santa Cruz, and that has turned into a big scandal. Of course, our newspaper didn't touch it, but it has been on other radio shows, and it seems to be a pattern with certain local governments to have these seeming hand-in-glove relationships between a bureaucratic enforcement agency like a planning department or a tax collector, local tax collector, and then an administrative hearing board that acts like a judge, but they're not a judge, as I understand it.
And in the meantime, they can seize all your assets. Now, we have not seen a judge to this date, and yet we've lost. They have seized over $1 million worth of property. They seized all of our equipment. Everything that was titled was seized.
Everything that was titled was seized. So
or
they would go
as
to
far as a piece of property, everything that was in our name. They seized over $1 million. They actually they stopped over $800,000 worth of property sales that was already written out and signed, and the closing date was only less than a month after they did the liens against our property.
So you're talking about you had contracts with other people to deliver to them a house that you're in the business of moving houses, so you moved them to lots in accordance with all the requirements, and had entered into a contract to sell those homes. And the Department of Labor and Industries came in and prevented you doing that?
Yes, and them contracts were already in writing. There were 12 of them already in writing. Added up to over $800,000 in the one thing that they stopped. Naturally, then we lost it all. It all went back to the underwriters who I had financed. I had taken out $250,000 of my own private home. And due to their liens and confiscating all of our equities, I have lost that now. It went up for, it was in the sheriff's sale just a few weeks back.
Now they.
So, we're going to get forced. Well, that's in the making. It was sold actually 2 weeks ago on the 4th of February.
Wait, what was sold? What was sold on the 4th of February?
Our own private residence, my own home.
Your own private home.
We moved this home. This is a nice, beautiful 5,000 square foot home. We moved this home back in 97 or 98, so it's been our home for quite a while. We've enjoyed it. But we took some money out against it on this last project we did, and they totally put us under, taking, you know, holding up all of our sales. I make money by moving a house, setting it down, and then reselling it.
Okay, let me go over this and make sure that we're all understanding the same thing. On the basis of an administrative hearing, now there's no jury there or anything.
Oh, absolutely, no.
No jury. Okay, and you were being charged with having employed your 11 and 13-year-old son in the business of leading the life of the family of John and Angela Doty. That's all you were doing. You were engaging your children in your family's business. An administrative judge orders taxes to be paid for that, and in order to enforce that, he takes the power to enjoin your business from concluding the sales it had with customers, and as a result, the bank took the project away?
Right, right.
All because of an allegment that involved you're having your kids with you during the day and engaged in what it is that your business does to get things done. That's all we're talking about here.
Right. In fact, they seized over $130,000 of cash bonds that I had posted around the county and in the state levels of government. I post high bonds to move these houses down the road.
Now, what is it that the Labor and Industries Department might want to tell our audience that they were seeking to obtain from you? I mean, what is it they were protecting? And we want to get back to that question when we come back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio. Well, welcome back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio. And for the stations that don't cut away from us, we're just going to proceed with our discussion with Mr. Jude Doty of the state of Washington, Yakima, Washington, who's had quite some financial devastation hit his family as a result of an administrative process of a bureaucratic determination that he owed some workers' comp and taxes. It's basically workers' comp taxes, is that right?
Right, right.
Well, so at this point, you have lost your business and you have lost your home to this administrative ruling circumstance. Now, where do you go from here, and why did this happen to you?
They're again identifying our children as employees. Now, from here, we will soon, by God's grace, be in the county superior court, and there we'll have an actual judge and a jury, and we'll have the opportunity to enter case law instead. Which in these administrative courts, you're listening and looking at their administrative policy, and that's virtually all.
Well, so they look at their own policy, and that really becomes the issue. The brief that was sent to me by Labor and Industries, and I didn't ask for this. He volunteered it. He felt proud that as the brief says, the laws governing child labor apply to parents who employ their children. Well, you know, I would think that to employ your children, is a crazy notion. You know, it would be a very bad message to send to a child that he is a parent's employee. It's not the way any of us tend to nurture our children. Now, that doesn't mean we may not pay them for this or that, or when they're 16 years old, they might go on a business payroll. But we're talking 11 and 13-year-old children here. How could the agencies argue this with a straight face?
And in fact, they have argued the exact other side of the fence dozens of times here in the state of Washington. When parents were paying benefits, paying the premiums in on their children when they was under 18, 17-year-old and 18-year-old, under 18. The minor was injured on the job, and the state, the Department of Labor and Industry argued that they were not employees. They've made a completely 180-degree reversal here and there.
Wow. So what we have is policy. Are they able? I wasn't able, frankly, to see in this brief that I had to quickly go through. I did not see any clear expression of statute anywhere that would indicate that that any legislative body made this ruling. Is there some legislation in the state of Washington that gives over to the labor and industries? Hang on just one second. We'll be right back. Oh, we have another minute here before our audience returns. Is there any state law that says children are the employees of parents if they're working for their family business?
In the administrative code, WAC, we call it, Washington Administrative Code, you can interpret it that way. Naturally, that was not written by the legislators. That was written by the department.
Well, wait a second. When law is being made without legislative process, without public hearings, it needs to be looked at quite a bit differently. And for an administrative judge to take your livelihood, to take the home where your children are living, on the basis of a policy that may be interpreted a certain way and was written by an unelected official and executed by them, boy, oh boy, I think we've got something that the Superior Court does need to hear about. And we're going to be welcoming back our audience here in just a few seconds at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. Welcome back. We'll continue our conversation with Jude Doty in respect to the allegations against him and the actions taken against him by Washington State's Department of Labor and Industries. Jude, it's quite unbelievable that, except that I know it's the case, it's amazing that what we've got is a family being taken out of their home in order to extract money from a man who is working with his children.
Well, that's what they have done. They've, with all these fines, it's over $140,000 so far. It's accumulated to be that.
Well, and
penalties
it's
that's been accumulating. And it's based on the single redefining the word of to employ and applying that within the home. And we realize that they had no legislative mandate to redefine that word to employ, but the department did, of its own accord, do that. And so now my children are identified as employees, and the state thinks they have jurisdiction over them now.
All right. Now, is there law in America, or is there law in the state of Washington that speaks to this issue and that would make it quite clear that these bureaucrats who've made policy and have applied it as law and have taken your property as a result of their writing and their interpretation of their writing?
Yes, there is. We have three Supreme Court rulings in the state of Washington that makes it clear that a parent child employment relationship is never deemed as employment if the child's under 18, unless the child is emancipated, there's a written contract, there's fixed compensation, and complete liberty of the child to spend the money without any parental control. Them four conditions have been upheld in our state Supreme Court three times, and they're totally disregarding them today. In the federal level, we find statutory law and case law both that totally exempt parent-child relationships from all the employment standards. The biggest Child Labor Act that was done in 1939, the very first part of it, makes it really clear that it doesn't apply to parent-child relationships. And in fact, they cite that. We have found it with even the Department of Labor and Industry. has recognized that in some of their own periodicals that they have written. I have seen that. But they don't want to recognize it here in this administrative court.
Wow. And yet, those who are administering this court, one would think, would have that information. Have you provided them with those kinds of legal authorities?
Oh, yes, we have. Yes, we have. Yes, absolutely. And in fact, you know, while we're talking about this, a lot of these references are actually quoted and cited. If you went to our website on familiesthatwork.org, so maybe we'd turn our listeners to make a note of that later. They could pull up that on the web, familiesthatwork.org. We have our home story told there of how the process has happened over the last 2 years.
Well, I think it's an excellent website, and it provides a good example for other people around America who are being battered by these administrative processes, whether it's in the family area or in the business area or in the land ownership area. These administrative courts are in many communities interpreting and enforcing policies that have never seen the light of a legislative process. And this is a very troublesome circumstance for the state of justice in the United States. If you have a question or you have a circumstance that you want to contribute to this show, give us a call at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-24-LIBERTY. Well, Jude, tell us about some of the due process violations. You know, I've contended that when you've got a lawless policy, you know, that is a policy without a basis in law, you end up having to protect yourself by voiding people's due process rights. And have you had issues with respect to the due process of how this has come along, aside from the fact they took your business and took your bank accounts and you've lost your home over it?
That their violation of our due process rights are the only way they ever succeed on any of these matters. They do about 20, this department does about 20 citations of parent-child relationships a year in the state of Washington. But when they can keep them in the administrative hearing, before the administrative hearing boards for literally 5 years and plus, no one ever makes it to the county or the higher courts. They keep them totally out of the court. That's the only way they succeed. So no one has the right to a quick and speedy trial before a jury of your peers. As I say, only 17 out of 10,000 cases a year in this state will ever see the light of a court. That ought to get most people's dandruff up, you would think.
You would think so, because yesterday it was someone down the street from you, and tomorrow it's your brother or sister, and the day after that it's you. And if we don't start sticking up for each other, pretty soon there'll be nobody left to stick up for you. We'll be right back here at the Freedom 21 Radio Show. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. I'm Michael Shaw. I'm here with our special guest, Jude Doty, and we're talking about the labor and industries in the state of Washington and the horrendous circumstance that he has faced with several years of difficulty with them. Now, you have some of a history with the Department of Labor and Industries, don't you?
Yes, they have past, done four audits. This is the fifth one I believe they've done with me. And there again, their pattern is the same. Every one of these in the past, I think I have a very good cause for my position, and yet it will never see the light of a court. And they can, the last one that I was in, I spent 4.5 years, we argued that thing back and forth, and they just totally defy reason. But when they know they can string you out there and you will never get into a courtroom, they have nothing to lose. When you realize that they only can lose 17 out of 10,000, they got no risk here. They just get accomplished what they want.
Well, and lose, what you mean by lose is 17 people get out of their spider web,
right,
and into the courts that we all think we have the right to access.
Right.
Wow. Well, we have a call, Will from Missouri. Will? Good evening, Will.
Good evening, Michael, and good evening, Jude.
Hi there.
My heart is just in churning over this Washington State Department of Labor industry with you. I would like to bring out two cases or categories that would be similar to this. Now, I'm familiar with the process of house moving, and I understand that it requires not only very specialized equipment, trailers and whatnot, and jacking, but it also requires a tremendous amount of skill on the part of the mover, or you just destroy the home when you move it. But if you were to take the same and apply it to something like land surveying, which is a skill that is passed generally from father to son, largely because there are no competent schools in America to teach the trade, and or just the general farming industry. I know two-year-olds that are required to bring in the eggs, and if you tried to tell them not to bring in the chickens' eggs and feed the chickens, they would think you were doing something wrong to them. But this is just absolutely heinous. I don't see how this hearing board is being able to endure this process. All across Washington, no matter where you look, there are these kinds of farms and businesses, particularly in eastern Washington, and I would think that you would be able to get a tremendous amount of support from the cattle ranchers and other associations.
We have talked to the Farm Bureau, and they don't even know how close they are. They are really in the sights of the labor and industry. We've got the labor and industry's
own report. Hold that for a minute. We'll be right back.
Okay.
We're back at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio, and we have on the phone, calling from Missouri, Will, who has shared his thoughts on this circumstance and has asked the question of whether or not the land interests in eastern Washington, who are being battered by sustainable development policies, that's my add to what Will had to say, are willing to join with him. And Jude is beginning to describe how it is that the local landowner groups are beginning to pay some attention. Proceed, Jude.
Yeah, they have full intent in the state of Washington of bringing OSHA onto the family farm into any family enterprise. I can quote them there. So their intent is to get jurisdiction over every one of these private, you know, businesses or farms, family operations.
Well, one could easily understand the motivation behind it, because if you are swamped with illegals that have very little skill, obviously they don't want us to raise up a family, the upright family that can carry on the trade. They'll want us to dumb our children down in school and bring the illegals in and put them to work for peanuts. But my heart's out with you, and I hope you can give us some more information as how we can get a hold of these people in Washington. I'd certainly like to send them a letter myself.
If you would go now to even the Families That Work, look at that website, and then we have a lot of contact numbers where you can contact the right people, and a lot of the statistics are there. I'll bring up one other thing that we hit pretty hard on that site. We identified the risk associated with children at work, and I make a strong case in that report. I think they're increasing the risk of the children, I would, on the average, of more than 40 times by taking them to not parents that, you know, they're getting away from their parents and they're putting them into peer influence, you know, activities that are much higher risk. We compare a child on a work site compared to everything else, he's 34 higher risk to driving with his parents in the car than being hurt on a construction site.
That's right. I worked in construction for many years, and I can guarantee you that when you're in an environment like that where you have father sons working hand in hand, that's what built this country. That's what built Seattle. That's what built Washington. And these people are out of their minds, and I think that they're persecuting you in unreasonable ways.
Well, I agree with you, Will, and I want to thank you very much for your call here tonight. Do you have anything else you want to say to Jude? Or?
No, that's fine. Just best of luck and Godspeed.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. Well, Jude, I think you've got more to tell us. Keep going.
Well, I think they made a couple pretty large mistakes here when they got so far as the carrying in the mail or bringing in a USPS parcel. Hopefully it will raise the hackles on every parent, seeing how they encroach into the family in this case. And the only difference in my case and all the others, that they do 20 a year, the only difference is that we have lasted and we have stayed to the fight and we're going to stay to the end. And that's what they never expected.
Well,
It's never happened for him before. It's the first. We will see this thing in the light of a court someday, very soon now, within the next few couple months. We'll be into it. The county, we're right now in the, at the county superior court level.
Well, you know, we've had guests the last 2 weeks who have made breakthrough, huge victories with juries who've awarded punitive damages to government officials and punitive damages to employees of NGOs. And punitive damages against those who are working as partners with government. Now, that's what the juries do when they get to see these cases, and those out in the freedom movement need to understand that we need to support brave people like yourself who've had to endure a whole lot and who've got 7 children. I know one of them is a baby because I heard him in the background today, and so what we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, is someone, and there are someone's all over this country who are quietly doing the battle for our freedom, and it's time that we all begin to rally around the cause. You know, we talked, Will talked about low paid immigrant workers, but I think his real point was that America is being dumbed down, and the purpose for that is to satisfy a wish by the evil force that's existed forever, and that is to control human beings and to do it on a global basis. And that's, of course, what sustainable development's all about. You know, back to our labor and industries fellow up in the state of Washington, he didn't understand any of these things, I'm sure. He just told me, though, he said, well, this is how democracy works. And he says, if you don't like our rules, you'll just have to outvote them.
Well, that is not democracy. That's their kangaroo court system. That's how that works.
Well, that's one point. But the point I made to him was that America's not a democracy. America's a republic, a democratic republic. That's a small D and a big R. And what that means is the government's powers are limited. I told him, I said, the author of the Constitution, James Madison, said that democracy is the most vile form of government. It is as short-lived, and it is as short-lived as it is violent in its death. And of course, Plato said that democracy is dictatorship, and we're being manipulated, sedated, as you said to me the other night on the phone, Jude. We're being sedated into a manipulated democracy, which does, like Plato said, and as political analysts have always known, lead to tyranny. And, of course, Mikhail Gorbachev, who's a key figure in sustainable development, he says the more democracy, the more socialism. And, of course, the more socialism, well, there's only one way you keep a socialistic state, and that's a police force. So what we get is the left and the right each contributing to this new world order, one downward step at a time. And that's what we're showing here tonight. And I'll tell you, if you can bring together the victims of parenthood abuse by the government with victims of land use abuse by the government, and if the city folks begin to understand they're being put in cages called smart growth or human settlements, then the dynamic's going to start to shift. And we're seeing little rumblings of that all over the place, because America is figuring out that all these programs are happening similarly all around the country. Now, we've got some callers on the line, Jude. Tony from SoCal. Tony, are you there?
Hello.
Yes, Tony?
Yeah, I'm a contractor, and I have 4 children, and I put them to work as well. I've been thinking for the last couple of years about relocating to somewhere between Spokane and Post Falls, and I think I just decided to stay out of Washington. The comment I had, though, is that being a contractor and doing taxes and all that, if the state of Washington is going to say that your children are employees, I would recommend getting a tax attorney, and probably even get the IRS to help you, because if they classify your children as employees, then every single dime that you spend on them is deductible. And I would presume that you've been overpaying your taxes so much since you've had children, if every dime that you've spent on them is deductible, I bet that you haven't been deducting it. So I would think about getting a tax attorney and getting the IRS on your side when you threaten to refile. And I was just wondering if you had a comment on it.
No, but it's sure a big difference in whether these are my children or employees. Wow, that's night and day.
Yes.
I hadn't thought about what you just said. I'll quote them right here. They say the current distinctions in whether the minor is employed by a stranger or by the parent should be eliminated. Wow. that's an incredible from the department's perspective. So they don't think there's any difference whether it's a parent or an employee or another employee that's working with the child. They don't want to give the parents any benefit in reference to working with our our children. We have all, every one of them, done that from the beginning. So they're just not recognizing what traditionally has happened in our society.
Well, I want to thank you for calling in. I think the real point here, the real principle, of course, is that our children are our children.
Yeah.
And they make so many rules that start to, as our caller suggests, start to cross up over to each other because they don't have a consistent philosophy. That was one other thing that I was told right at the beginning of my conversation with the public official, the public affairs official. He said, I'm not coming on your show, but I want to give you information. And he said, and I'm not willing to talk about philosophy. And this is a philosophical premise. The question is, to whom do the children belong? To the state, with its officials of the labor and industry telling you how you live your life? Or do they belong to each listener, in each human being? Of course, we all know the answer to that. And I want to ask you a question before we go. We got a couple other callers. But do you have any suspicion as to why they picked you? I mean, too bad for them that they did, but do you have any? Why would a government that's hell bent on alienating the family? That's how I'd have to read it. Why would they come after you?
At the same time, it was coming from us from a lot of other angles here in the city of Yakima. We had over 30 some other challenges I got from the city. I was in court on dozens of different areas. Maybe not dozens in court, but I was charged with numerous ones. And we had made a strong confession of our faith here in the local papers. There was a big article written about us in Fall of 02. And even I had one person that told me in the Department of Labor and Industry that it was simply because of my faith in God that I was going, and I need to expect more of it, they said. And I had a hard time believing that almost, but maybe that's the case. I don't know why we were singled out, but other than labor and industry, we've been hit just unbelievable stories with the city of Yakima with violations.
Well, the nature of collectivism is to try to eliminate individual personality, and those people who stand clear in their conviction and benefit all of us sometimes pay the price. But really, it turns out, I think, perhaps not to be a price, because it's really the only healthy way that one feels one can live. Carol, we've got you on the phone from Arkansas.
Yes. Well, good evening, gentlemen. We recognize this, of course, as world socialism, which says that the child belongs to the state. And, of course, here in Arkansas, we had Hillary Clinton as Mrs. Governor, and she filed a lawsuit. Of course, the people of Arkansas at the time, and I think most of them still don't know, that she's the one who was responsible for filing that lawsuit against her husband as governor and the people of Arkansas the suit was filed against. And her whole objective was to get 200 more taxpayer-funded social workers, and they were targeting homeschoolers and 12 more children's judges just for hearing these child cases. And no one really put together, except Holy Spirit did give that to me one night in the middle of the night, and I went down to the state legislature the next day, and at the time we had... later to become Senator Tim Hutchison. He was then a member of our House. And I said, Tim, who filed this suit against the people of Arkansas and the governor? I said, did it have anything to do with a Children's Defense Fund group? And he said, he looked at me just really kind of strange, and he said, yeah, but he said, the suit was filed out of a group out of Sacramento, California. I said, Sacramento, California, my eye. I said, what would they know about two scam children in Fort Smith? I said, this was Hillary Clinton, because she, it was at the time, national chairman of the Children's Defense Fund Group. Well, this was, it was passed because it was like at that point 15 minutes until they were to vote on it in the House, and but then it got challenged in court and failed, actually, believe it or not. So we do have a few little battles that we win here and there, but of course she also, with a foreword by Nelson Mandela, wrote the It Takes a Village to Raise a Child, and of course she really does believe that the state should have control of a child from birth and until you're dead, really.
Yeah, she might be the grandmother.
Owns you. I just wonder, though, and this also, another thing that came to me while you were talking about this is the fearful prospect that we have to look at with boards and commissions that are appointed, not elected, and that's a very frightening thing because I see Mr. Bush doing a lot of this, and, of course, a lot of this coming under the Patriot Act, and if we allow these boards and commissions, they're going to run roughshod over all of us.
Yeah, there you
and
go,
I think,
Carol.
We better take note of it.
Absolutely. We do shows on that subject specifically. It's called Public-Private Partnerships, and it is happening all over. There's the two guys leading the brigade on that, although it's in every state, is Bush nationally and Schwarzenegger here in California. You know, we're being reinvented so fast that, you know, that any Soviet administrator would have his head spinning. So thank you very much, Carol. That was good information. And we've got Jack from Michigan. Jack, what do you have to contribute to us tonight?
When you ask the question of whose children are these, and I submit to you, the government has stated their children are their greatest natural resource. Unfortunately, most people have failed to recognize a relatively glaringly obvious fact that the municipal corporation at whatever level functions by deception and institutionalized ignorance and intimidation. What happens here, your guest mentioned legal jurisdiction. They gain legal jurisdiction that's constituted by the fact that these various commercial nexuses or agreements, which exist because we are under commercial law, and as such, when one contracts to the birth certificate, the marriage license, etc., driver's license, the unalienable natural rights that we enjoy as live flesh and blood natural people are essentially circumvented or
they're transferred away,
negated.
We
have. When that document, the guest said that his property is all titled. Well, it's titled to the municipal corporation by virtue of what's called a constructive trust, which is in Black's Law Dictionary. It's an adhesion contract where the contracting party is not given the opportunity of informed consent, which invalidates it, but they figure everyone's ignorant of the process of this operation of law.
You know, Jack, let me bring that to a point. I got our phones loaded here tonight. We had a good show from Wayne Age, who for 2 hours discussed that very issue. And one of the exciting things about that is that here in the state of California, the California Coastal Commission has been declared unconstitutional by our courts, and it is now being reviewed by the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court has specifically gone back to the lawyers in the case and said, what do we do with all the prior victims of the Coastal Commission? So the hope I see is that our law ought to get to the point where it looks at these adhesion contracts where people didn't know what they were doing because the government did not disclose what they were doing, and they are simply found to be void as a matter of law. But certainly for the time, we are all daily contracting our rights away when we sign certain form contracts. And for more information on that, tune into our archives and look for the Wayne Hage tape and download it and hear from Wayne Hage, a brilliant litigant before the federal courts. And you'll learn a lot. Meanwhile, we'll be right back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show in just a moment. We're back at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show, and I want to thank Jack from Michigan very much for his call. And we now have Keith from Capitola on the line.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're fine. Have you got some question or comment for our guest, Jude?
Got both. I want to thank you guys for bringing this up, because it's not only him, you know, Jude just losing his rights. He loses his rights. It's every American loses their rights. It's like, this is like the, you know, trial balloon case that once they do it to him, they're going to keep on going and going and going to everybody's kids. It's like the other guy that called from SoCal's a general contractor. I'm a general contractor, and I took a construction technology class in high school. Well, what's the difference in that and what Jude's doing with having his kids on a construction site? I was doing this in high school, and I could have been just as easily hurt at high school as his kids on the job site. And
they, in fact, point out that contrast and say there's, that's totally legal because it's nonprofit. They just exempt the school and any nonprofit, but they say the parents are, would be considered the employees. They actually identify that contrast, but they don't give the parents that benefit as they give the school district.
You know, I mean, that's supposed to make sense, the logic and reasoning behind it, because if I fall off the roof at school and get hurt, that's okay. But if you're paying the kid, he falls off the roof and gets hurt.
And in fact, I was not paying my children, and they were not emancipated. They were simply not employees.
Yeah, well, what's the difference in that and then paying your kid, giving your kid an allowance to go out and mow the lawn? I mean, first it's this, then it's going to be that.
Right.
You know,
and they are
like,
making efforts now to get into the family farm. They make reference many times to a family enterprise. They say that, that they exempt all domestic labor done in and around your private residence, but they're even excluding carrying in the mail. They say, no, that's not domestic labor in your or around your private residence. They say that would be employment, requiring minimum wage and all kinds of employment standards.
Well, I want to thank you, too, Keith, for calling. You know, I think the general public takes a very adverse reaction to this. But what we need to understand is that Congress just last month passed the mental health screening for all of our children. They're to be mentally health screened and then drugged if they don't pass the government's test for acceptable personality. That's what this is all about. Now, if you want to know more about that, go to the Liberty Committee, Congressman Ron Paul's Liberty Committee, who keeps daily updates on the status of those kinds of activities as they move through Congress. And that's something we can all begin to do. We have another caller, John from Spokane.
Hi, how's it going tonight? Hello,
well,
can you hear me all right?
Yes, yeah, we can. How are you tonight?
Oh, just fine, thank you. I tuned in late, but when your caller, or guest, I should say, Jude, I think his name is?
Yes.
When he mentioned L&I, kind of rang a bell, because I was recently working in a taxi company here in town, and I won't go into all the details, but one of the when we signed up, it was understood that we were independent contractors, and we signed the contract to that effect, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the independent contractors got into a dispute and decided to make life a little rough on the owner after it was a her, after she left the company, and she made a claim with L&I as if she were an employee, and started the ball rolling, and he ended up having to go to court and attempt to support his position that we were independent contractors, and he went to several levels through Superior Court. I believe he may have even carried it to the state Supreme Court, and it appears as though he has lost. And even though
this one, John, is not a family issue of the L&I coming into the family, but clearly these agencies get what we're showing here tonight with when they come into the family. Is how it is they can be very egregious. And before they get into the family, they do all kinds of havoc that they can get away with business people or with property owners. But the whole bottom line is that what we're seeing here is an increasingly concentrated effort by agencies, federal, state, and local, controlling our families and controlling our property, as the sustainable development motto seems to become more and more clear. And the core of sustainable development is the elimination. The objective is to eliminate the middle class of America so that we can all join together in a global state collective where people are chattel of the state. And, of course, a strong family union and a strong bond between father and child is something that simply can't happen in a socialist state. So, Jude, we've got a couple minutes left here. Can you wrap it up for our listeners and tell them how they may be able to contact you or learn more about this situation?
There again, go to the website, Families at Work, Families at Work, and you'll see the factors there. In fact, I argue the point that they are the greatest child abusers, child killers in our country. When they make regulations that separate parent from child, they are putting the children at risk, incredibly high risk. They're driving them into everything from obesity to pornography to all kinds of things, crying and loitering, all kinds of high-risk exposures that are actually, a lot of their own studies say many times that the work is the safest exposure a youth can find. It's safest. It's safer than going to school. It's just incredibly much a different factor. So they are driving our children at risk. They're putting that risk. You know, there's only one out of 200 youth that are killed every year are killed at a work setting. There's more youth killed in 3 weeks than we lose in 1 year of the Gulf War. 3 weeks. There's more teenagers killed every 3 weeks than we lose in 1 year of that Gulf War. So, but they are contributing to the fact that whenever they drive a wedge between the parent and child, and they're hurting that mentoring process between the parent and the son, my, they're going to be held responsible before God even. And they're certainly hurting our families at the home.
Well, it's a system where when it gets out of control, you end up with the rise of the wicked, and the wicked is going to try to tear down the family. And I want to congratulate you and thank you for being on our show, and I encourage our listeners to look at his website. I understand there may be some trust being set up to help you pursue these activities.